Morning, Liberty and family. My name's Calvin, if you don't know me, visitors here. I know Robin for many years back in the day, so she knows me, my brother as well. I'm married to my lovely wife, Laura, and my two kids, Lily and Judah, at the back. And I've been given the privilege to preach on the Kingdom series. And what better way to start than seeing more people join, families here joining, extending the Kingdom. And that's exactly what God's wanted to do through us. And so Matt started the series with just establishing the Kingdom in the beginning. Johnny, last week, just a reminder that he reminded us of our identity. Blessed are those that mourn, blessed are those that seek righteousness. But something now has changed in the atmosphere, and now we are called to action. We understand the Kingdom, we understand how we must live, but Christ now stands and he says we must go and live it. But is God wanting the biggest, strongest, baddest, most influential people to do it? Or is God using ordinary people here today, Liberty today, amongst his midst? We read in 1 Corinthians 1, 27 to 29, but God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of the world and the despised things and the other things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. We like to boast, but who should be boasting? We see that God is maybe choosing people that perhaps don't rely on their own strengths, their own achievements, their own qualities, looks, fame, fortune, but perhaps people who would rely on him. If you don't believe me, well, we're going to look at just a few people in the Old Testament, and we're going to get to the scripture. I'm just wanting to emphasize. We look at Moses in Exodus 3, verse 4. When God calls Moses, Moses says, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh?" Fear, worry, I can't do this. Gideon. See the Afrikaans coming through. Yes, my wife will be proud. Judges 6, 11 to 15. When the angels appeared, Gideon is hiding in a wine press because he's afraid of the Midianites. But what does God say? The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Gideon replies, my clan is the weakest and I'm the least in my family. We've seen a picture that God's not going to these powerful people. He's going to people that are fearful, worried. But he's saying that you're a warrior. David, we all know about David, and Jesse brings all his sons, Samuel, Os. But where's all the sons? David's not even interested in the shepherd boy, David. Jesse's not even interested in his son, the shepherd boy David. But David was the forgotten one, but God chose him. So are you forgotten? Jeremiah, too young. 1 verse 6 says, Jeremiah says, oh Lord, I do not know how to speak. I'm too young. God responds, do not say I am too young. God is not building this team like we build a team. He's not building this rugby team like we would choose people. He's building it differently. And maybe you can identify with one of these people. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And so today, I start with Jesus. In the book of Matthew, verses 3 to verse 16, he says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on the stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Can you picture the scene? A group of ordinary people, shivering, shaking, fishermen, laborers, overlooked people, ordinary Jews living under the Roman rule. People were oppressed, underappreciated, unsure of their future. To understand the climate of the day, Rome at that time, imagine a global superpower today like the EFF or the RVB, for those that don't know the RVB, you might not have been born. They were intense. And they put soldiers around the whole city corner. They forced you to pay taxes. And if anyone resisted, they'd publicly execute you. Rome, if you know about the crucifixion, was their terror tactics. It wasn't just punishment, it was public warning. People were nailed to crosses along main roads so everyone could see. The message was simple. If you challenge Rome, this is what happens. And now Jesus is telling this ordinary people, you go be salt. Not you're becoming salt. Not you once were salt. Your identity is already established. Your purpose is established. Your mission is established. All in one sentence. So you might be asking, what's my calling? What's my mission? What's my identity? Go be salt. And so, easy said than done, you're going to be facing giants. As we know, Rome was full of rude people, big, strong people, intelligent people, highly successful people, famous people. We have that in our own society today. But that doesn't take the fact that God has given you your identity, purpose, and mission. David, when he faced Goliath, he could have looked at Goliath and just ran the opposite side and said, I'm out of here. His identity wasn't in the ability of his size, strength, or anything. It was in the ability of what Christ told him to do. But maybe some of you have heard a different message. You're useless. You're too slow. You're too dumb. You'll never succeed. Maybe people have spoken that over you. And words shape our identity. Ephesians 4 verse 29 says, do not let any unwholesome talk out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for the building of others up, like Glenn said this morning. Jesus speaks life over you. He speaks life over his followers. He's putting in a hope and a future. But why does he choose salt? Why not bananas? Why not bread? Why not fish? Why not burgers? Salt was a huge significance in the ancient world. Salt was everywhere. It's in the sea. It's in the deserts. It's in homes. It's in food. It's in restaurants. Everyone understood salt. And if you don't have salt in your house, that's different. But you probably do. And everyone has it. It was also valuable. The Roman soldiers were sometimes paid with it. The word salary comes from the Latin word related to salt. Did you know that? But what does salt do? So I'm going to go through three functions as to why I think God used the word salt. I was recently in Zimbabwe and my aunt made this beautiful bread. She forgot to add salt to it. She added sugar. And she said to me, can you come taste this bread? And I tasted it and I said, something's missing. And she said, oh, you know what? I'm getting older, she said, and I forgot, got mixed up with the salt. She said, let me just add some salt. And as she did that, everything changed. It added the flavor. Jesus is using relatable language, not confusing you, not making this big puzzle work at art. Christians are meant to bring flavor to this world. My first little thing is bringing joy. And while we're hearing this whole thing about joy is that Christians bring joy to the house. There's so many dark places. You can walk around and you'll see people in dark areas. Christians bring joy. They show kindness when nothing is in return. That's bringing flavor. That's showing people there's a difference. Loving sacrificially when it's hard. I could think of about a whole group of people. I'm sure you could. Loving sacrificially when it's hard. But you're adding flavor. You're adding something different. Living with purpose and hope when the world feels purposeless. You've got this mandate. You've got your purpose. You're showing it and they are seeing it. And you're adding flavor to the norm of the world. Because the world is running on fear, pride, and competition, just to say a few things. We bring the grace when it hurts. We bring humility when pride wants to come out. I was playing golf with a guy once, and he said, "Yes, your golf is good." And I said to him, "Oh, you know, it's really not that, it's rubbish." He said, "Oh, you're so humble, you're proud of it." And I realized that we can't win this game. Even when we're being humble, there's a little sense of pride. Generosity. We're meant to be generous because what we've been given. Or do you just want it for yourself? You want every, just gobble it all up, all mine. Or you're generous with it. Because that's being flavorful. That's adding salt. Self-control. When you see a beautiful feast, and you know some people have eaten, when that flesh is hungry and you just want to go all out, maybe it's time to just let those feast. And then they will see, and they will notice you're adding flavor and not just taking the flavor. But salt is not just adding flavor, it also preserves. The fishermen of the Sea of Galilee sitting in that crowd when Jesus is preaching, they're like, "Oh, we understand you," because there's no fridges then. And so salt would have preserved a lot of their fish. Christians preserve goodness in a decaying world. The world brings chaos, distraction, destruction. But we're meant to uphold truth and righteousness. We are to keep what was said from Jesus and not waver to the left or the right. A doubtful mind. You know when someone's doubtful, you need to keep reminding them, hey, stay on path, stay on the mission, stay on the purpose, stay on the flavor. Preserving God's values in business, even. It's so easy to just cop out, change direction, do something that's going to make a quick fix, rich scheme. But that's not upholding the kingdom. That's not upholding, that's not preserving something. Leading your family well. You're preserving the goodness of God. You're preserving that part where it's been lost and everything is just go out and be who you want to be. And there's no leadership in the families. We're preserving what has God said. Not as what he and she and what has God said. You're preserving what God has said. Salt heals. Salt cleans and heals wounds. Salt has been used as a disinfectant. It even stings at first, but it prevents infection and promotes healing. Christians bring healing when they forgive instead of taking revenge. It's easier said than done. I'm preaching to myself here. Reconcile broken relationships. Who wants to do that? But God is using this thing of, this is my kingdom. This is how we do it. Speak truth that corrects destructive behavior, difficult conversations. Are you shying away from them? Are you willing to go and be the salt that can heal that destructive behavior? Bring hope to people trapped in sin, addictions, or despair. That's a big one. Are you going the extra mile? Are you carrying that bag? Are you listening? But all being said and done, we get to a warning now. Salt that loses saltiness. But if the salt loses saltiness, it is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled on. As I mentioned, salt in Jesus' time often came from the Dead Sea region. It was mixed with minerals, sand, impurities. Over time, it could lose its potency. What remained was useless, and it would be thrown on roads, and people would go on that same pathway and they would trample on it. When believers start living the same way as the world, their influence just weakens and weakens and weakens. Scripture warns about this repeatedly. Book of Genesis 4:7. Sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is to have you. Not just that pretty girl or that wife that wants you. Sin also wants you. Epistle of James. Sin grows and eventually brings death. Verses 1 to 15. What are some of the ways we lose our identity, we lose our flavor, we lose our saltiness? I mentioned business again. Dishonesty in life, just being dishonest. Just lying and just continuously the lying spirit. People are watching. Are you committed? Did you say what you were going to say? If not, it's fine, we'll forgive you. 3, 4, 5 times, eventually, that saltiness, I'm going to skip him. Hidden sins. Preaching to myself. Are we letting that bring? Is that taking our saltiness away? The lust, the pawns, the addictions. Facing our identity in the things of the world. All of a sudden, you were so on track, you were so on mission, you were so on doing the things of the Lord. That music now is becoming your identity. Those people that you used to befriend, you've chosen just a little cooler crowd, maybe a crowd that's, you start losing your saltiness. The way we look, the way we dress, go to gym, are we identity faced in how big we are and how we look and the things of the world? We start losing our saltiness. We've been given this mandate, this kingdom mindset. When our lifestyle contradicts our message, people stop listening. Hey, just going to stop. Jesus doesn't want this for you. Eventually, left to our sinful desires, we become tasteless and trampled on, just where the devil wants you. Do you want to be trampled on? Do you want to be tasteless? Salt represented desolation when it loses its purpose. Scary. In Deuteronomy 29, verse 23, the whole land was burning waste of salt and sulfur. Nothing planted, nothing sprouting. You're not producing good fruit. You're not sprouting. You're losing it. Another, you are the light of the world. Matthew 5, verse 14, you are the light of the world. What a beautiful illustration. No, you didn't say medicine is the light of the world. It's helpful. You didn't say technology is the help of the world. It's helpful. Not the lights in your house. They're helpful. You are the light of the world. Think of that for a second. What a mandate. What a purpose. You're very important. Jesus himself said in Gospel of John 8, verse 12, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness. Christians reflect this light. Light guides. In the ancient world, light meant direction and safety. No street lights, no electricity. When a lamp was lit in a house or village, it helped people find their way. Christians guide people by showing them how to live, demonstrating faith and hope, pointing them towards God. You know that guy when you're camping and he's got that torch. If he switches that torch off, you're in trouble. And he's also, you've got to watch him because he's like leading the way. But he's guiding. He's got the light. That's what we're meant to be. Guiding, leading, trustworthy. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, God says. Cities were built in those, they were built on hills so travelers could see them far away. Are you seen far away? Like a lighthouse, ships, when they need to find home, they look for the lighthouse. If they choose another route, it could cost them their life. Lighthouses served as refuge, navigation points, places of safety. Are you a refuge for people? Are you a safe place for them to come and talk to you and pray with you? Are you someone people can go to for wisdom and guidance? Are you trustworthy? Can people trust you with their children, their money, their business? Do people look at you and say, I need to come to him. He's got something glowing in him. If I lose this direction, if I go another way, he's going somewhere. Are you that light that people want to come to, a safety? Because just one of you, God, we're reminded, God doesn't need a big team. He can just use one, two people. But those people that are influenced by the gospel, by his word, by his identity, you can influence a family, workplace, school, community. Just you. And Jesus continues. Lights must not be hidden. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Who does that? Who puts the lights a lamp, puts it under the cupboard? No one. We are not meant to hide this wonderful light. What God is saying, he's using common language here. He's not getting out the norm. We are not meant to keep it to ourselves. My salvation story. We share it. We flow it. When I was saved, I was like a fist pop. Like, you couldn't let my mouth stop talking about Christ. You know, when it bubbles in you, you just can't stop. You don't need any more motivation. You don't need anything more to bring you that oomph because it's just overflowing. Light must be seen in how we treat people, how we speak to people, how we forgive, how we serve. The world should be able to see the difference. This guy doesn't blend in. He's different. Are you blending in or are you shining light? Are you a different light? Are you that light that Duracell's just fading and fading and fading? Or are you bright and you're always charged? But what's the purpose of all this? What's the purpose of this message? Jesus finishes with the reason. Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Glorify your Father in heaven. The goal is not attention to ourselves. The goal is when people see our lives, they see God. That's the motivation. We shine, so he shines. What's your motivation to living this all out? Is it for this gigantic mansion you're getting? Is it for this, you're just adding up the cents because you know you're going to get all this something in heaven? Or is it because he's been good to you, so you're going to be good to others? The joy set before the Lord, he endured the cross. Because it was you he was thinking about. He left that palace. He left all that stuff for you. Is your motivation the Father? I'm not talking about moral perfection. If you've heard, I need to be good today, you've lost the whole message. Because that will only puff you up and you're never going to achieve it. The Pharisees loved the outward appearance. And their fact is, they had their reward on earth. Our reward is faithful living for what's to come. So do not lose heart. If you have fallen short today or tomorrow, Paul struggled with this. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I want to do, I keep on doing. Micah 7 verse 8, though I've fallen, I will rise. Though I sit in darkness, the Lord will be my light. Are you getting up after your season of just walking away? Are you getting back up and say, I'm going to follow Jesus? Are you getting back to when Jesus told you your identity, your mission? Or are you just fading away slowly like that torch's battery just dying, dying, and dying? Or You just need a recharge. I'm going to end with this illustration that I thought was good with when my son did this triathlon. We were told that he's going to swim, run, and then cycle. And I was like, how does this all work? I just cycle. I don't do a triathlon. And I didn't know how it was all going to work out. And I kept thinking to Laura, like, do you put your kit here? You just get disorientated. I got there, and I ended up getting to the water, running with Judah. And while I'm running, I'm yelling the parents, trying to breathe, because it's like, you're tired. I'm behind Judah. I'm pushing him on. I'm motivating him. I'm going my boy. We get to the place where he's got to now change. We're taking the clothes off. We're putting the helmet on. We're pushing him. Go. I'm trying to get now ahead and try and meet him where he's not dead yet. Just to check that the pathway is good. Just to see that everything's in order. I don't want him to fail. He's coming around the corner. I'm motivated. I can see the boy's tired. You've got this voice shining. Go. Go, my son. Rory Dye mentions the fact that he says, go boyki, go boyki. And I was rooting for Judah all the way. But the funny thing happened, towards the end, I'm like, you're nearly there. And then I'm filming this whole thing because I've got a GoPro and I want him to see it one day. And then we get to the part where he's got to get his medal. But somebody told me, that's not for you. He must get that. So I stepped out and I let him run through. But the weirdest thing happened is that when they called his name, they said, well done, Calvin Burtis. Well done, Calvin Burtis. I got the names mixed up. Yeah, yeah. And so Judah is like, he's got his medal. But here's the thing. We are not going to give. God gets the glory. We get the medal, but he gets the glory. He's the one encouraging you. He's the one giving you the paracletus, the helper. He's the one pushing you on, steering you on. And when we get to heaven, it's all going to be about him that got you there. Not you got yourself there. He got you there. And one day, Judah will realize that. And so to finish, God has called ordinary people to go be light, be salt in a broken world, not to hide and be afraid.